Well, our next witness is Mrs. Lillian Pitka. We have been spending the evening at Mrs. Pitka's fish camp on the Yukon River, and we thank you, Mrs. Pitka, for allowing us to stay here for the evening and overnight. We've already had some witnesses tonight, and Mrs. Pitka now is willing to say a few words. So maybe you could just tell us how you think ANCSA has worked out, the land claim settlement has worked out, and how the people feel about it, and how you feel about it, Mrs. Pitka.
Well, to me, this having in your own fish camp, which belongs to you, and making use of it is very important, because we have to be here from, I'd say, about end of June till September to do our fishing here. And we don't have that chance in the flats. And down here, it's real, we have a pretty good eddy, and we get the fish we need. And in the fall time, in September, we cut some fish to, freeze. And long ways to haul the fish, but we get this fish supply for the winter here. And it's very important we have our fish. And, sad thing about this, about the moose, is that we're having trouble with getting our moose meat too. They give us just so much limit, and we have to depend on white man's food. Most of the time we're eating white man's food now, but pretty soon there'll be no more funds, no more jobs. Pretty soon it'll be hard for us, and we have to go back to our own way of life again. And the thing I understand is that they don't want us to take too much we don't need out of our hunting and fishing. And I can't understand that, because there is times we have trouble trying to get our fish. Like, you have to have your net in the right place to catch the fish you want. And sometimes with this putting net in and so many days, and pull it out again and putting it in again and pulling it out again, we sure lose a lot of time. The best time of fishing. And we have to have the eddy in the right place, but the people with the fish wheel is a different story. They got that wheel in the right place to start with, and they have, they can't do their catching. But here, it's hard. I had a tough time last summer, and again, I hear I'm going to have another tough time here, because my son-in-law is coming in. And I hate to fight over an eddy. Yes. I don't believe in this. I think we're entitled to our way of life in the past, because I saw the life that my parents had. They live off the land. We got our meat, our fish, all summer long. Hunt anytime we want to, hunt ducks, eat off the land. Now today we have to buy from the store. And this land claim, if I knew what it was all about, I would have gotten another, there's a land where a fish camp where I raise my kids. And my daughter wants that ground now, but she said she's going to have to look into it and see how she could get a hold of it. Maybe even have to buy the land. When that fish camp was the place where I raised them. And I can't understand that. It's not, our land is not free to us anymore.
Who owns it now?
There's just nobody there. My smokehouse is there. And when my son was living, Bill Pitka Jr., when his daddy died, he was staying in this fish camp here, because his daddy gave this ground to his sons. And I had my own fish camp, and I was staying there. But now, my son passed away. He drowned here. And now this last year, I had to fight my son-in-law. He's a white man. He wants to take this land over, this fish camp over. And this fish camp belongs to my sons. That's the way their daddy wanted it. And this is the reason why I'm here. Otherwise, I could have been in that other fish camp where I raised my kids. And at the time, they were getting land claims. Everybody was, you know, just talking about it, getting lands. And I was too busy working as a health aide. And I was taking care of the little store I had, supporting my family. And I didn't pay attention to what was going on. See, I didn't have no education, but I was trying to make a living. That's all I was interested in. And I didn't know my daughter would want that ground if I turned it over to her at that time. She would have owned that fish camp now. But now they said, we can't have it. And I don't know what to do about it.
But who owns it now?
Nobody, I guess. The fish camp is there.
But who says you can't have it?
That's what they told me.
But who's they?
It's too, it's past, you know. Selecting lands is past.
Oh, you can't have it as an allotment.
Yeah.
I see.
Uh-huh. They said the land claiming lands is past, so
too
I can't.
Late to
too late to claim it.
I understand.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's a thing that I don't understand, why we have to be treated this way. I believe we're entitled to our land. I believe we can stay out where we used to go muskratting. And I think we should be able to do these things, because this is our land. This is where we're going to live all the time. We can't get away from it. This is where we were brought up, raised. We raise our children. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Well, thank you. Mary, is there anything you'd like to, you think, Mistress?
Well, Cheryl, Mary Kanswick. Cheryl is president of the Stevens Village Corporation. Do you find that the corporation and the things that it does that have any effect on Stevens Village at all?
I don't know. I guess they're doing what they wanted to do, you know, getting in, looking into different things. But I don't pay attention to what's going on. I'm trying to make my living. I'm more interested in making a living for myself.
That's true for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. See, there the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, which mm-hmm. is part of what cut off the allotment program, are two different land laws. And so you were talking about, you know, allotments and the Allotment Act, and we're interested in that, but we're also interested in the law that was passed in 1971, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, and that's what set up the corporations, mm-hmm. you know, the regional corporation and the village corporation. Mm-hmm. And so we're also interested in, you know, how that affected you and whether you noticed any difference when that law was passed and those corporations were formed. And do you belong to the Doyon Corporation too, right?
Yes.
Have you done anything with them, or have you gone to any of their meetings? Or
I used to go to meeting when I was on the health board. I mean, health aid, primary health aid, but now I never get to go. I stay home most of the time, so I don't know what's going on. But I think they're good, doing a good job, I think. Yeah. That's about all.
Could I ask something?
Mm-hmm, sure.
This is Jim Sykes. You mentioned that you are going to be pulling your net for several days and putting it back in. Is that because the state fish and game laws? Is that why you're going to be pulling your net all the time?
Yes, I saw them today. You know, this is Monday. Sunday, we pull our net out. Now, Tuesday, we're going to put it in, 6 o'clock Tuesday. Now, today, they're running up the river. I saw them three times coming down from Stevens Village on the river, checking out the river along the eddies, I suppose. They're flying low, you know. Mm-hmm. They went up the ways. I seen them three times. And I think that's just a waste of money. It costs money to fly. I think it's just a waste of... I don't think anybody will want to break this law. You know, not in this area where we're just only fishing for ourselves. See, up this way so far is they're limited to 7 days a week. But unfortunately, we're down at this area where people are fishing for commercial.
I'm sorry, you said you have to take your net out before the commercial fishermen are open. Is that it?
Well, we have to go along with them because the fish and wildlife guys are watching. Even though we're fishing subsistence, they're still watching our eddies. And we have to pull our net out, put it back in at the same time these commercial fishers are. Mm-hmm. And we're fishing for ourselves, and they're fishing to make money. Yeah. That's kind of bad for our fishing. Because last summer I had a tough time because I had my son got in my eddy. He had 300-foot net, and my eddy was full of moss because I had to stay away 200 feet away from him, and I couldn't do nothing because I was 15 minutes late to put my net in. And it's hard work, you know, to pull the net out. Untying it and taking it out. By that time, you take the fish out, and by that time you take the net out, you might even be half an hour late. And that's when the airplane land over there, fish and wildlife guys land over there. So I went over and talked to them. I had it all on my mind what to say to them anyway, because I live off of fish. I can't go without fish. So I had to make them understand that I'm fishing for myself. And these people make money on the fishing, and they don't bother these people. But here I am trying to catch fish for myself, and they land in my eddy and want to know what was going on. I wasn't trying to cheat nobody. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, is that substantially different, the way the law works, than how you got your fish? I mean, did you used to get your fish a lot quicker before the game laws? I mean, could you tell us a little bit how you used to get your fish before the state laws were as they are now?
Well, we put our net in, you know. The water changes, so you have to have your fish net in the right place to catch the fish. So if you're trying to find a right place while you're putting your net in and pulling it out and putting it in and pulling it out, you lose a lot of time to try to get the fish, because there's times there's nothing in the net. Maybe there's none. There's sometimes one or two. And by that time, you lose a lot of time. That's what happened to me last year. And too bad I have to be down this way. Yeah.
Well, thanks very much, Ms. Pitka. You were saying you and your husband went out and got muskrats.
Yeah. The food stamps and the welfare really ruined our people. Because even though muskrat, the past few years ago, about 2 years ago, was $5 a skin, they won't go out trapping muskrats. And at the time when I was raising my children, I had about 5 children, and they were small. We still had to go out. I had 3 children, and my husband would pack one on his back, and I'd be carrying one, and one would be walking, and we make portage about 75 minutes. Walking over the portage. That's just going one way, carrying our stuff. And we'd move out in March, and we'd set traps. Every day we check our muskrats. Traps in, they were only 65 cents, 75 cents, but we work hard, try to get all we can. Up into May, 1st of June, we move in from rat camp. And my husband would have dried muskrat skins. Soon as we come to the village, then we pay our bill with the muskrats. What we get a supply of groceries to take out with us, you know. Yeah, those were really good days. But now, nobody tries to go out to do anything. I hear Minto people, they stay in camp just to be in camp. But we don't even do that in the village. Yeah. And I remember when I was small, my dad used to stay out and had a cabin, way up, 2-3 cabins. He used to run that line. We used to stay out there all winter. Move to muskrat camping in March, stay there till May, into May. Move into Stevens Village in June in a boat or canoe. Yeah. Nowadays, everybody just want to sit around the village, don't do nothing. They still eat anyway. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's all going.
Well, we're holding a little meeting here at the fish camp of Fred and Danny Mayo on the Yukon River. Very nice place with some tall trees surrounding it. And there's a tent and a smokehouse, and a net is up, and a fish wheel on the beach, and two or three other tents, and a cache, and dogs. Very nice place. So we just wanted to ask Annie Mayo her impressions of ANCSA, the land claim settlement, the corporations, how things have worked out, and how people feel about it down at Rampart and along the river.
Well, not living in Rampart right now. I'm over in Fairbanks, going to school during the winter months and fishing in the summer. But the big thing, the big way that ANCSA has affected my life, I guess, is given me the opportunity to see how the business world should be or is run, and kind of like forcing me to go to school, I guess, so I can learn more and get involved in the way I am involved. I've been a board member or officer of my corporation, Village Corporation, which is Rampart Corporation, for a number of years, about 6 or 7 years. And in that way, in that aspect, I've gotten very involved, especially in dealing with the money part of the corporation, not necessarily the land portion or the other different aspects of the corporation. I've learned, you know, how the business world operates in terms of the dollar aspect of it, I guess.
How has the corporation, the Village Corporation at Rampart, been doing over the years?
I've worked with a number of other corporations, and the last job I had, doing their bookkeeping and just and teaching bookkeeping to different village clerks, and just in doing that and talking to other people who have worked with different corporations, Banner Yolkon, which is a Rampart Corporation, is, as far as the money side of it goes and getting getting their money invested in the right way, is about number two. There's another corporation who's just a little bit better than us, as far as not misusing funds and just, you know, working with their money and keeping it going all the time instead of just using it up and not investing, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Is that a corporation here on the river, or do you mean in the whole state?
It's the interior, one of the interior villages, I should say.
What about employment? Your husband, Fred Mayo, was telling me that the Rampart Corporation has provided employment for shareholders. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay, that is one of the objectives, I guess, the goals of the different corporate officers and board members, is to always look toward the shareholder first when you have a job opening or any type of opportunity that could be expanded into a job. We've always looked toward our shareholders first. The different ways that, like in Rampart, we built a store there and added on and built warehouses and all that kind of stuff. We've always hired the shareholder first, and any type of job that was opened up in Rampart, for instance, the school, we always fought and made sure that whoever's going to do the job, to, you know, we would like our shareholders to be involved in that job. And the other part of it is, if there are any kind of like workshops or seminars or anything like that that we think would be beneficial to our shareholders and in turn be beneficial to the corporation, we make sure that they get involved in those things, and if we have to, we'll pay their way.
You said that you were going to school in Fairbanks. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Does it have to do with business, or?
Yes, very much so. Before, it was in fact 1971, when my husband was in the Army, and it was right after that we moved to Rampart, and I got involved in the village government there, the village council, and for, gosh, about 6 or 7 years I was, I guess you could call, village clerk or bookkeeper or whatever. I took care of the village books, and I attended meetings throughout, you know, representing the villages, and traveled quite a bit and learned quite a bit, and just realized, you know, I just didn't know enough of the, I guess you call, the book portion of business to be of any benefit to either a village council or a village corporation or whatever. So then and there I decided to go to school and accounting. Well, I was just going to go in for a business management degree, but I decided that accounting, although it's a lot harder, yeah, I decided to do it that way. And so that's what I'm doing. I've got about two more semesters if I want to kill myself, but I'll stretch it into 3 semesters I've got left to go.
What about 1991? You know, after people may be in a position to sell their shares, and the question of taxation 20 years after conveyance, the land could be taxed, doesn't mean it will be, but it could be. And the question of the children born since 1971, have you any views on those questions?
Well, 1991, big word, big year. Yeah, I've had a lot of thoughts about different things that are going to happen in 1991. one of my main concerns, I guess, would be the ability for shareholders to be able to sell their stock. To me, that is very scary. But, you know, it's going to happen. If that is the only channel that is open, you know, that's going to happen. Because there are just too many natives who have lived in, there's just been too many frustrated years to be able to say, I've got this thing in my hand that's worth a lot of money. Am I going to hold on to it, or am I going to spend it for a new snow machine or a new house or whatever? You know, there's just not too many avenues open for them to say that they're not. I've been involved in a couple of seminars or just meetings involving these types of issues. And
To change the terms of the act so that, or within your corporation, say, to make a decision not to have those shares alienable, not to be able to sell those shares, would you think that would be a good thing?
Well, you know, barriers have been put up in so many different fashions, so many different ways in front of the natives. You know, there's a barrier, you can't do this, and you're not going to get this. And right now, all they're saying is, we haven't seen a damn thing yet. We haven't seen anything. Some corporations like ours, for instance, we pay dividends once or twice a year, and that's all they see. They don't see any kind of paper that says, this is my land. They just haven't seen anything. And another barrier, like, no, you're not going to be able to sell your land, you know, that's like another slap in the face. So my feelings are not necessarily the feelings of the person who's real in dire need of money at this time, who needs a snow machine to go trapping next year. My feelings are different, because my goal is to be able to use my degree to go out and make some money on my own and not have to depend on this thing I'm holding in my hand, this certificate or whatever. So, but I'm just trying to think, like, trying to, I guess, repeat the things I've heard over and over and over. What else can I do? I'm going to sell. If I get the chance, I'm going to sell. And some people even say, if I get the chance, boy, I'm going to sell my land.
How many of the Rampart shareholders live in Rampart, and how many live in Fairbanks or Anchorage or outside of the village? Any idea?
Actually, there's about 30 to 40, not even, well, about there, of Rampart shareholders in Rampart. And a majority of them live in Fairbanks and Anchorage, and some live in the lower 48. I think you'll find the people in Rampart are the people I talk to all the time. Being a board member and actually an officer of the corporation, I you know, do like to talk to them and get their opinion about different things that we do. And so they're the people that I hear saying, if I get the chance, I'm going to sell my stock. And the land, I think, is different, though. You know, there's just one person I've talked to in all those people who've said, if I get the chance, I'm going to sell my land. But it's always been, on the land aspect, I'm going to save it for my kids. This is something I'm going to hang on to for my kids, if I ever see the paper. You know, a lot of people are concerned about that piece of paper that says, this land at such place is yours. My husband is one of them.
You mean the allotment?
Yeah, all he's gotten is paper saying it's going to be appealed by this group and that group and all this and all that. So, and that's, I guess, one of his main concerns, that he hasn't seen anything.
So you're saying that people with allotments are saying they would never sell their allotments, they want to pass them on to their children.
That
what about
they would like to do. Which hat shall I put on? Shareholder or corporate officer? I guess speaking as an officer, I would say the things that we've always looked toward is using the corporate land in some type of way that can be beneficial to all shareholders. Like we've talked about different off-the-wall things like making a ski slope. You know, if the the road ever gets built, going to Rampart, those mountains are beautiful. If a ski slope could ever be developed there, or different things like timber and just open for use to shareholders, like especially around the hunting areas and pieces of land that's only accessible if you go through corporation land. But otherwise, that's not one of my big interests in the corporation, I guess because of my education. I don't know that much about land.
Anything else that comes to mind?
There's just so many jumbled thoughts.
What about the children born after 1971? Do you see that as a problem, or do you think that it's sufficient that they can inherit shares from their parents?
I've always been of the thought that, there's got to be. There's got to be a guideline. I mean, you can't just. If there is a way, yes, open it up to kids who are born after 1971, a way that'll be fair to everybody else. But, there's got to be some type of a line, some place where you draw the line, and that was where they drew the line. I don't have any real strong opinion as to, or any solution, or even hint of a solution toward opening it up to children who were born after 1971. I just have two kids, and I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're in my will, they're in my husband's will. Like I said, I don't have any real strong opinion. There's my pet. Tail got chewed off somehow this winter. But otherwise, one of the biggest concerns I had earlier, I wrote a paper about 3 years ago when I first started school. One of my main concerns was because I hear so much, so many times, what is the land claims? Where has it gotten me? I don't know a damn thing about law and all this kind of stuff. And especially the ones who are not board members and who do not really take that much of an interest in the dealings of the corporation, what's happening. They all say, well, I don't know anything about it. What am I supposed to be looking for? And sometimes they even say, well, what is 1991? What's going to happen? Reports have been written, not as big, large scope as this, but so many reports have been written saying, well, this should be done, that should be done. Go out, interview a bunch of people and say, well, they think this should be done, that should be done. Heck, I could, name a lot of reports that have been written. Tanana Chiefs, FNA, everybody writes reports. I ran into another girl, she's doing another report. For using government money, I should say, but so many reports, but nothing tangible, I guess I should say, has been done to help the everyday Joe understand what's going on. Like I said, a lot of reports have been written and tossed aside because they don't understand the language. Or if a seminar is being held, it's only open to certain people, or not open to certain people, but they have no way of going over to Fairbanks and attending this workshop, or You know, it's just sad to hear, even now, it's even sadder to hear because, you know, my eyes were really open to that, that point a few years ago because I started school and I got really interested in it. But even now, it's really sad to hear someone say, well, I don't know anything about it, so I don't care. Yeah.
Could, when we finish this work, Mrs. Mayo, we'll send you a copy of my report. Maybe you could just give us your address in Fairbanks before we leave.
Okay, it's 1131 Merganser, Merganser, Fairbanks 99701. I'd love to have a copy.
We'll send it to you for sure. Well, thanks very much for letting us stop here and for giving us your views.
It would be interesting if there's more that you'd like to add.
Right at this moment in time, you know, I wasn't really prepared for this, so I haven't really sorted out my thoughts, but there's just a lot of things that I've thought about. In the past, especially being involved with the board, learning the different ways of even holding a board meeting and using that knowledge, I guess I can talk to the shareholders. But like I said, a lot of them just don't give a damn because they haven't seen anything in front of them that says you own this much land or your stock is worth this much, I should say.
Have you thought about what would be the ideal sort of way to go about informing people?
You know, we talked about this last winter, one of my professors and I. They've got a good educational system, the one in the satellite one that goes to the villages. It's an excellent system, and it's not used enough toward the land claims. Say, oh boy, I saw this one that just bored me to tears. I mean, I can just see someone trying to sit there. I just could not believe it. I mean, give us a little bit more, you know. They could use that system. It's a real good system. The only thing is you have to be able to hold the person's attention. You know, they've got this one show that it just goes on and on and on. I mean, 15 minutes of that and it just wipes me out. I think that's a real good way to approach the people. People like to watch TV anyway. But make it interesting. I mean, you know, cartoons even, heck. You know, just some way to keep their attention, I guess. Because you're never going to draw an everyday person to a meeting if he is not going to get a stipend or whatever, per diem or whatever. They're interested in getting something out of, like a lot of the board members, only become a board member because they, oh good, we can get our way paid over to Fairbanks every so often, or we can get a per diem check or whatever, you know. They sit there all through the meeting. I hope by now we got rid of all those out of our corporation, but a lot of them will not get involved unless they get something out of it. They won't attend a workshop or a seminar or just an everyday meeting unless they get paid for it. I don't know how your meeting went up there, but I know the ones who testified are the ones who are involved with corporations. I'm not sure if anybody else would, because they haven't seen anything.
I had a meeting in Stevens Village. Mm-hmm. We had over 20 people come and testify, and not all of them were involved in the corporation.
That's good. That's really good to hear. I'm not saying involved, not just only the corporation, but involved in other ways, like the chief or the village clerk or even the telephone operator. Boy, the one that was in Rampart, she was really good. She was interested in everything. Of course, she heard everything, but she was interested in everything, you know. And then she went on, like I did, she went on to school. But those are the kind of people who become interested. It's just, I guess, they've got more drive than others. You know, if they ain't going to get anything out of it, they're not going to give anything. Mm-hmm. So I hope you do have good luck in Rampart.
Okay, well, thanks very much for your help, and we'll be on our way to Rampart, I guess. make sure we're in time for the meeting.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thanks. That's real good of you.
The second lady's voice on this interview was that of Mary Kantzowicz.